Bill 370, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 5546. Sheila.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, you have a memo of June 20th that summarizes our recommendations. It starts out with just a brief recap of where the governor's printed budget was and the issues that the subcommittee discussed in that budget. I won't go through all those unless you want a refresher course there, but suffice it to say that this agency did take actual program reductions in the governor's budget. There were a couple of enhancement packages for psychiatric nurses in the youth correctional facilities, and then some funding that is requested to help maintain the operations of the juvenile justice information system now that it's up and fully operating in almost all the counties. I would walk you through the third page of this memo, which is the attached spreadsheet, and that is a summary of the recommendations for this agency's budget at this time. So if we want to start with that, the spreadsheet looks like this. It's the last page of this. Well, it's the third page in of your packet.
Okay. It says page 3 on it at the bottom.
No. Okay. Oh, you're way. Let me go through the packet. I'm sorry. The first page is a memorandum with a summary spreadsheet. Then I have a handy-dandy little chart that shows staffing, that shows the bed recommendations, and we'll get to that in a minute. And then the last thickest document that you got is all the gory detail from the budget side in terms of comparisons to historical budgets, to current service level, to the governor's rec, to the LFO rec, and then the program and package detail for all of the program units within the budget. So unless there's particular questions on this piece, I would not go through this. This is just for your information. What I intend to work from is this summary spreadsheet and the memo that's on top of the packet. So on the summary memo, I've itemized the issues there. The first five, numbers 1 through 5, are rate and assessment reductions that you've seen in other budgets as a result of actions that the legislature has taken or updated rate for assessments that this agency pays. The first one is the PERS rate reduction. We got information early in the session that rate had been adjusted downward. There was a reduction in the Attorney General's rate based on action on the DOJ budget. There was a reduction in the Department of Administrative Services Human Resources Services Division assessment, which is reflected there. There is a reduction in the Secretary of State Audits Division assessment. And then for many agencies, as they built their budgets, there had been a change in the expected long-distance rates that hadn't been reflected in those budgets, and so that's corrected for here. So those first five are pretty much technical adjustments based on those rate and assessment reductions. Then we get into other technical corrections to the governor's budget. Item 6 and item 10, if you look down on the spreadsheet, basically go together. The bottom line net effect on the budget is zero. But what this does is reflect that because of the April 2001 population forecast changes, which reduced the expected population for the close custody facilities, we felt that it was necessary to show a reduction in current service level, that is, the cost of continuing programs at the forecast level is lower because of the reductions in the April 2001 forecast. Now, these weren't actual bed reductions, but if you remember, the governor's budget was based on the October 2000 forecast. That was higher than the April 2001 forecast came in. The April 2001 forecast is what we generally base the legislatively adopted budget on. And so this reflects just an adjustment to current service level, a reduction in the current service level number. And then we make a corresponding adjustment in the governor's reduction package, which is item 10. So that, again, the bottom line on the agency budget is zero. It's a matter of presentation. So you don't have an artificially or an outdated current service level estimate when you're talking about how this budget compares to current service level. So that's what items 6 and 10 reflect. Item 7 is the federal Medicaid.
Whoever you are.
Well, he doesn't have his glasses on, so it's harder.
The question is important, even if the lead-in is not very good. Does the fact that you're able to make these reductions free up any money in the budget for the budget? Fact that we're not going to have so many beds to fill, but can we do other things with that money or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, one of the choices would have been to adjust the budget downward for the effect of the population forecast. And normally, if the governor's budget would have fully funded the population forecast initially, that's what we automatically would have done, would have been to adjust it downward. Because the governor's budget made bed reductions from that initial October forecast, in effect, what we're recommending is that you take the savings, if you will, from the forecast, not redirect it to something else out there, but just say, okay, that saves us from actually having to cut that many beds. So in terms of actual programmatic cuts, it mitigates the impact of that.
It doesn't free up any money.
It doesn't free up money unless you maintain the initial level of reduction in the governor's budget, which we're not recommending that you do. Okay, line item 7 then is a reduction in general fund and an increase in federal fund related to Medicaid match rates. In some of the agency's community programs, they claim federal Medicaid match for eligible services for the eligible youth. The Medicaid match rate fluctuates. The federal government sets that match rate based on how Oregon's economy basically is doing in comparison with the rest of the nation, and that's done on a 3-year rolling basis. So it has some lag effect there. But in the human services budget, about every 6 months we update that, so because it has a significant revenue swing, because we've used that money to provide program services, and if the match rate goes down, then we use general fund to backfill what we would otherwise have expected to get in federal funds. So similarly in this agency, what we want to do is update the Medicaid match rate expectation to match and be consistent with those that we're using in the Department of Human Services budgets. So this adjustment affects a general fund savings, a small general fund savings, federal funds increase. There's no programmatic impact to this adjustment. Okay, line 8. There's some excess other funds limitation in the governor's budget related to juvenile justice information system project. When the project was put in place, it was financed with certificates of participation. All of the certificates of participation, other funds expenditure limitation wasn't removed from the budget initially, and so this just adjusts that to the fact that there's other funds limitation in there that isn't needed. So those are our recommended current service level adjustments for this budget. Then we get into the policy package changes. Item 9 is a corresponding adjustment to item 1. It's the effect of the PERS rate reductions. Because the policy packages generally reduce staff overall, the effect of the PERS rate reduction is to add back funding in those packages. But as you can see, between item number one and item number nine, overall, there is a net reduction as a result of the PERS adjustment. It just looks a little funny because of how we split this out between current service level and package adjustments. Then item 10 is, as we talked about before, the corresponding adjustment for item 6, the adjustment for the population forecast. Again, we reduced the current service level, but then we had to adjust the reduction package because you can't take out as a program reduction what isn't there in current service level. Then items 11 through 20 are really the meat of the recommendations that have some kind of programmatic impact. Item 11 is a request that the agency has brought forward to establish position authority for limited duration positions that they're currently using and for some contracted services to provide medical and dental services. They've been using limited duration position. It's an ongoing need, and so limited duration positions aren't appropriate for that in the long term. And where they've been contracting for medical and dental services, in some cases, there's been some continuity of care issues where people will send in substitutes to take care of the kids. The agency would have more control over the services that are provided if they were staff positions. And so they have asked for 16 positions, 12.75 FTE, to make those permanent positions within their budget. And our recommendation would be that they be allowed to do that. Okay. Next item is number 12. As you may remember, in this budget, one of the reductions was to stop renting the Multnomah County beds in the Donald E. Long facility. The agency had been renting 32 beds there. In addition to the costs of providing the programs and services to those kids, that was an additional $741,000 cost just for the bed rental. And so the governor's budget eliminated those 32 beds, and the agency will be moving those kids to McLaren. In terms of timing, however, because we're so late into the biennium and that had been expected to be a 24-month savings, to effectively manage the transition of the youth from that facility back to McLaren, the agency needs an additional 1 month's rent at Multnomah County, and so that's what this $30,875 is. So it's allowing them to continue the rent through July 2001 to get the kids all back into McLaren. And I don't know if they have to, like an apartment, go in and clean up afterwards after they move out, but it will allow them to wrap up all of the things they need to do as they vacate that facility. Okay, item 14 is the big restoration in this facilities budget. This restores the 50 beds at the Tillamook Youth Accountability Camp that the governor's budget had originally proposed to eliminate. It maintains 100 youth accountability beds out of the budget. So there was a reduction of 150 youth accountability beds in the governor's budget. This restores 50 of those youth accountability beds. It also phases in the Riverbend facility during the biennium, not as youth accountability camp beds, but as some other beds for youth, so that during the biennium, that Riverbend facility, which is the Eastern Oregon facility, the new one that had only been open on a trial basis, it will allow that one to open up during the biennium.
Senator Brown?
Thank you. So Sheila, as a result of this restoration and given the population forecast, how many beds are we short through the biennium?
If you look at this handy dandy little chart that says OIA close custody bed funding, there's two answers to your question. One is on the chart, if you look at the line that show right below the 1150, if you look at the 1149 bed capacity, in terms of physical bed capacity, including the River Bend facility, the OIA has 1,149 beds without remodeling anything or adding anything. So basically, the LAB recommended line would take us through the end of the biennium before they're bumping up against their bed capacity, assuming that, that's the way those beds come in. So in terms of bed capacity, we won't really be short beds until perhaps right at the end of the biennium. Now, in terms of short of the full forecast funding, on average, the recommended budget averages about 30 beds short of the full forecast. So it's about a 2.6 reduction from that April 2001 forecast line. Now, we're comfortable with that for several reasons. One is that the forecast is just a forecast, and we need to see how things progress throughout the biennium. Over the last couple years, there has been a reduction both in the forecast, for example, from the April 99 forecast to the April 2001 forecast, there was over a 7% reduction in the number of beds that we would have expected to have had been funding in this budget. So there has been a reduction in the forecast over time. We also believe that there's still some impact from the juvenile crime prevention grant money that's to be realized, because a lot of those local juvenile crime prevention programs came online later in the biennium, and we expect that as they become ongoing programs and develop their full impact, that we will perhaps see additional reductions in the forecast or in youth coming to OIA. So we think that the 2.6% below the forecast line is a reasonable level as a starting point. Now, as we get into the budget notes, we are recommending that there be a budget note so that if there are significant changes, either up or down, in where the agency is in terms of actual youth coming into the facilities, that they would be asked to come to the e-board and report on that and talk about the alternatives for managing it.
Is there anything reserved in case that happens?
There is no reservation at this point.
How accurate generally is the forecast? Is it generally, the need is less than the forecast usually? Because suddenly we have a change in the forecast while we've been here, right? And the forecast shows much less. Is there some change in the assumptions in the forecast, or is the track record showing that somehow or other we're just not having the clientele, or what? What's happening? Why the forecast change?
Do you want me to address that, or
yeah.
Do you want the agency?
Okay. Either way.
Well, I'll take a first stab at it. The forecast basically reflects two things. One is youth coming in or youth committed to OIA's close custody, but also their length of stay. And so the dynamics of those two, and particularly in the juvenile system, the impact of the local dynamics on who comes to OIA, it's difficult to do as precise a forecasting as perhaps you can do on the adult correction side.
But how do we know the new forecast is accurate and the old one is inaccurate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I guess we would say that there isn't any way of knowing that the new forecast is accurate. It probably isn't accurate. It's just an estimate. But it is something that we can use to help guide the budgeting and the programmatic decisions. I would expect that the October forecast will be either up or down from this one. There's so many dynamics, and this forecasting process on the juvenile corrections side is still relatively new. They've only been doing it several years, and so there's a lot of factors in there that although when they use their methodology and they prepare their forecast, they take into account what they know. There's a lot that's happening that they cannot take into account.
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, Karen Brzovic, the Director of the Oregon Youth Authority. Until the most recent forecast, it has been remarkably accurate.
Has it? Huh?
Yes, and though it is quite manipulatable, I guess, And an example of that is right now, we are ending this biennium with 1,127 beds, which is only two beds off of where the forecast says we should begin the biennium. I think one reason that it's so close is the counties have seen the target number and know what they should be heading for and have known about the reductions, and they are driving toward that number. They're not going to put kids in that they think they're going to have to quickly move out. However, there was recently, in the last couple of months, a national study of forecasts used across the country to determine the need for juvenile beds, and Oregon's was touted as the best there that exists. So, as faulty as it is, it's the best out there.
Senator Brown.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess, Karen, I'd like to follow up on a couple things. Number one, I'm getting letters from folks that work for you whose names will be left unmentioned, expressing concern that they're releasing offenders, youth offenders, prior to their release date because there is a lack of beds. And then my second question is, my recollection when Senate Bill 1 was passed through the efforts of Kungowski and Del Parks and blah, 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 that the whole theory behind that was that we would have empty beds available, and that empty beds act as a deterrent for young people. They know if they commit crimes, there's a bed they need to go to. And so my concern about this is that we will have no empty beds.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, yes, there is truth in that. In fact, we just recently had a request from the union that we place in the files of our parole officers letters stating that the parole officers are not responsible for the decisions that they make in releasing offenders because they're releasing them due to bed space, not appropriate decision making. Of course, we're not going to grant their wish, but there is a belief that the most effective bed in juvenile corrections is an empty bed. It's the threat of a bed. And even with the forecast, and certainly when we are funded, as staff said, below the forecast, and we are working within a restricted number of beds due to funding, that does mean that we manage. It's different than the Department of Corrections. We manage the beds according to the funded number of beds, not according to the need.
Senator Brown.
Could you talk to me, and I don't remember what year we placed the cap on the beds at McLaren, the number of kids that could go there. How is this any different than that?
It's, Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, I think that was 1984 or 1985. That was 514 beds. The difference is in the number of total beds available, it's significantly larger, but there still is a cap. The difference is that there is growth in that cap. It does, the total number of beds does grow. It's just whether it grows to meet the actual need or whether it grows to meet a need that's constrained by the fiscal resources in the budget.
Senator Brown, I just observed that we're going to go through some other recent restorations here, and be my view that if we're not totally comfortable with the distribution and you want to meet needs for additional beds, at least one figure that caught my eye was item 19, which is the gang intervention program, which the governor had placed at zero. Now 3.15 million. So if there's some movement that you're interested in, I'd sure be pleased to hear that. Senator Trow?
I guess mine was more of an informational question. I know it's possible, as you say, to manipulate the use of beds so that you have at least some beds available, but are you fairly often force because of lack of beds simply to reduce sentencing or reduce the time spent in those beds in order to free up beds?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, that varies county by county.
You make the decision to the counties?
The Youth Authority, by statute, has the ultimate decision-making authority. We try to share that with the counties because, in the end, they have to manage the youth that goes back to the community. So we work with the counties to try to ensure that the youth that is placed out in the community is the one that would be the most appropriate of those who could potentially go out.
Are you sending people back quite often that should stay longer? Or is it occasion? Occasionally, or is it often?
It, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, it varies. Until recently, the Youth Authority has been in a mode of expansion and adding beds, and so I would have to say no, we have not been. But in the last 6 months, yes, we have reached the limit of our bed capacity and have been sending kids out, and with this budget, that will be a regular occurrence.
Okay, thank you. We need to know that.
Further questions? Okay, Sheila?
Moving on to items 15 through 19 are restorations on the community programs side. If you recall from the initial presentation and discussions of the agency's budget, there was a discussion of the need to balance the system overall, not have just community programs or just hard beds or go one way or another, but to have a balance in terms of resources available. And so the recommended restorations would bring back part of the parole and probation reductions in the governor's budget that had initially eliminated 12 positions. This would bring back 5 of those positions. It restores funding for county diversions and the Deschutes pilot to about a 4.3% reduction from current service level. Instead of the initial governor's budget was 7.3%, I believe, below current service level. Same thing with individualized services, which is funding that's available for providing services to youth as they transition out of the facility. So what do they need to help keep them going in the community? And then the foster and residential care funding is partially restored as well. Then line item 19, the governor's budget eliminated funding for the Multnomah County Gang Intervention Program. This brings back most of that funding. There was $3.4 million that was eliminated initially. This brings back $3.2 million of that. And as we get into the budget notes, there's some direction associated with a piece of that. Then item 20 is the co-chair's direction to take out a 1% reduction of out-of-state travel. So you see a total fund $384 reduction in this line item. The agency doesn't go out of state much.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to point that out. We don't get out much.
Apparently not.
We go to Turner. Sublimity.
I know those vacant beds.
So you can see the bottom line there is our proposed subcommittee recommended budget. I won't go over the numbers there, but it's roughly $270 million total funds, 1380 positions, 1,279.96 FTE. So it is about a 3.2% increase from the governor's printed budget. So
let me ask on item 16, the county diversion/Deschutes pilot funding. How did that break out? How much is diversion? How much is pilot funded?
Mr. Chair, I believe there's like 40,000 of it that's Deschutes pilot, and the rest is county diversion. I'd have to check my detail numbers. Basically, what it does is bring Well, let me go back a step. In the agency's budget, the Deschutes pilot was treated as a special payment to counties and provided a 3.5% cost of living adjustment in the current service level, as was the county diversion money. The county diversion money and the Deschutes pilot then in the governor's budget each took a 7% reduction from that level. This adds both of those funding streams back to where it's about a 4.3% reduction from the current service level. Overall, the Deschutes pilot funding is about $1.5 million. It is just slightly less than where it was in 9901.
But, and on that score, we'll have a budget note.
Yes, when we get
speaks to the Deschutes.
There are several pilot budget notes that we're proposing related to Deschutes County.
Just to report to the committee, we've had a little more success, and I know Karen has, with getting some information from that pilot program. It's still, in my judgment, inadequate, and there will be an audit, we think, performed during this interim. The next group that sits here will be able to conclude whether or not that program should continue. But I don't think anything's certain yet, as far as I know. So thank you.
I'm done with the recommended adjustments, so I'm basically done with page one of this summary memo. And we now get into the budget statement of expectation and the budget notes.
Chair, before we do this, Karen, what sort of problems will this budget level provide for you? Where, if you have to come back to the e-board to talk to us about any inadequacies, where might there be as we fund at this level?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, we've discussed it a little bit, depending on where we are with the bed forecast.
The beds, the most mostly.
What we have done in this budget is really targeted our growth at trying to bring the Riverbend facility back on line, which was funded in the current biennium's budget. And what that puts in jeopardy for us is a program that we have been working with the mental health division on, working to open on there at the state hospital, working cooperatively with them to open a unit at the state hospital that we had hoped to fund with growth, that we would be able to move the funding for a 25-bed unit of growth to the mental health division, that they could match with Title 19 funds and open a mental health, a 20-bed mental health unit for our most seriously disturbed kids. And so I'm very concerned that we don't have the funds to do that.
Is there any place else in the budget outside of your budget that would help fund that or not?
Not that I'm aware of at all. So we'll be looking at that very carefully. I mean, that's something that we still have the kids and still have the need. If we did it on our facility, we don't have the expertise that the mental health division has, and we would have to do it at our $100+ a day rate, whereas if the mental health division could do it, they can get the Title 19 match and triple that amount. So that's my biggest concern.
Responding to Senator Troll and Senator Brown's concern about the bed problem you may face, when you look at the revised budget, and particularly items 11 through probably don't need to deal with that out-of-state travel reduction, 11 through 19. Is that the, and I realize this is the product of a lot of different inputs, is this the way you would distribute the add-backs? I mean, I know it's a tough question, but particularly the item 19, the 0 to 3.15 million, I don't know. I'd probably, if I was designing this, provide more beds, and I'd look to that pot to find them.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee. That was the Youth Authority's initial recommendation in that Multnomah County is the biggest user of the Youth Authority's beds. So our recommendation was not to fund the Multnomah gang money, not because it's not, they don't use it well, not because it's not a badly needed, but that it didn't go to statewide programs, of which Multnomah was a big beneficiary. But that, we did not prevail in that. They...
Well, could I phrase it this way? You would not object to us providing for additional beds, utilizing that particular appropriation as a funding source?
As I understand it, there are forces beyond my ability. Help me, Bill.
Well, I realize there are other people who have input into this budget, but I think it's darned important that we have your view, because there are few people who know as much about this program, maybe no one, than you do. And if we can't have, somehow we hopefully would be responsive to those who know the most.
My views, as the director of the agency, when we put together our request to the governor and our throughout, have always been that to provide statewide access is the agency's priority. I can't say that personally I've deviated from that. The governor's office may have chosen a different course on that for very good reasons.
Well, and maybe Representative Hansen can help me out too. It's my understanding Multnomah County, one, also provides funding for this program, and secondly, now I think one of the co-chairs that I spoke with rather recently thought that this money also went to other county programs, or is it exclusively Multnomah County? He was laboring under the impression that maybe it went to other places. Is that...
Mr. Chair, I don't know that it does. I do know that some of the county money is used, for example, to leverage some A&D funding, but it's in Multnomah County for Multnomah County youth. The other...
I won't identify which co-chair so as to not demean their...
Mr. Chair, it all goes to Multnomah County. There are
exclusively
other,
Multnomah County?
Yes, there are
okay.
other counties who have expressed similar needs, because there is a big need for these kinds of programs, and the Youth Authority has been very committed to working at mitigating overrepresentation of minority youth, and Multnomah County has been a partner with us in that.
Right. Well, my suggestion for the committee would not be to remove all of that 3.15, but at least maybe we should have some consideration given to an allocation of some of that or some other pot to the, I think, is perhaps a higher priority, and that's what it's I asked Representative Hansen.
Well, it's fairly complicated. One, Multnomah County does supplement these funds with some local dollars. The other issue is, it's sort of like there's no free lunch. If Multnomah County is the largest user of beds, if this program's eliminated, does that tend to drive the increase the need for beds? And I'm not in a position to balance out and look you in the eye and say, yeah, eliminating $3 million here or a portion of it will drive X number of beds, but certainly that's the impact. And at that point, whether if this money's reduced and Multnomah County is put in a position of having to backfill it, what other programs do they eliminate that they're also doing? I think it's if you impact one part of this, you end up indirectly impacting some other areas. And I can't speak for the county in terms of what changes they'd be making in their budget if this money either disappeared or stays in place, whether money they're anticipating backfilling can go back to the sheriff's department, put more officers on the street, or fund other portions of their juvenile justice program. But it's all interrelated.
That's true. A point I was trying to make again was that the governor's rec budget had $0. If we added back a couple of million, that would be, in light of other needs.
Mr. Chair?
Bordering on the heroic. I'd called on Representative Leonard.
I was just going to say that if we're going to seriously entertain your suggestion, that I'd like to hear from somebody from the county specifically what the impacts would be.
We'll do that if it's of interest to the committee. If I'm just off on a lark here, we won't.
Mr. Chair,
I'd wait to hear your input. Senator Brown and then Senator Trill.
I just wanted to let folks know that I have a letter detailing the specific expenditures for the $3.1 million. The original request was 3.4. This was a huge priority for the Democrats, both sides. And it's very important to us in terms of a prevention mode that we keep these dollars in here.
What would the members of the committee have to do to get a letter from Multnomah County like that?
I can, I'll share it. How's that? I just went up to my office to get it. I didn't know what form it was in, but I'm happy to share it with you.
The date of that letter?
April 10th.
Okay, and I mean, is that all about the program or about the choices that we're forced to make?
No, this is the program and what it entails. For example, treatment services for gang-affected youth, including multi-system therapy provided through SEI, Tony Hobson's organization, 6.3 FTE juvenile justice counselors in the gang resource intervention team, which supervises gang-involved youth and works with their families.
But my point is that it's fine to advocate for a program. My goodness, we hear a lot of that. What maybe that letter does or does not address is that their preference, given perhaps what could be a problem with beds and the lack thereof.
It would not address that
it's
issue,
just simply,
Mr. Chair, because
we love this program and we don't care if no beds are there for people.
Well, it does talk about the decrease in services provided to high-risk gang-affected youth will most likely result in a decreased success rate for these youth under supervision and an increase in youth committed to OYA facilities. So either it can pay at this level and end up with fewer beds at the OYA level, or we can ignore this level and end up with probably substantially more beds at that level, and I don't know what the dollar per dollar ratio is.
Right,
we can have copies made.
Senator Crowell?
Yeah, I think Senator Brown said much of what I wanted to say. I just know that in the caucus, when we've talked about issues related to the budget, Senator Carter, Senator Gordley, especially, both of those have said this program is very essential to keep Portland youth occupied, keep there from being a real problem with some Portland youth during the summer, and that they really think this is an important program.
But I don't quarrel with their conclusion. What I observe is that
to the point
was
that
comfortable with zero funding for that program.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, we'll move on.
Mr.
Chair, yes.
Since you've given me this entree as the director of the agency, something that would make me feel very much more comfortable in this budget. I mean, if you look at what we're being asked to do on this chart, is to move from, we currently today have 1,127 youth in beds in July 1, to move down to the LAB recommended means we've got to move that many kids out. And the forecast has us actually shows us going over at the end of the biennium, and to have assurance, because you all leave to have assurance that we could have access to the emergency board should the forecast prove to be on target would be very helpful to us as an agency.
Is that in a budget note already, Sheila, or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trove, we have a budget note that we're recommending that asks OIA to manage its beds, 30 beds on average, before the April 2001 population forecast level, and indicates that if there is significant change in the forecast, that we would expect that they would report back on what their population has been to date, what the forecast trend is, and then present some alternatives for dealing with the budget impact. And frankly, that would be an up or a down in the forecast. I mean, if the forecast is 50 beds higher, we would expect that they would come back. If it's 50 beds lower, we would expect that they would come back and let us know about that. The other point I would make is that in terms of the LAB recommended bed levels, that's calculated based on a certain dollar amount of a certain number of beds in a certain month. We realize that, you know, in reality, they're not going to necessarily have their beds follow that exact trend or the ups and down variances in what we're projecting here. It's just a method of calculating what the cost and the recommended budget is. So there is, the agency has some flexibility in terms of how many beds at what time within the given amount. What our recommendation is that you do approve a budget that has them manage it at about 30 beds below where the current forecast is, but again, allow them to come into the e-board for significant changes upward or downward.
I guess, Mr. Chair, to
Representative Leonard,
bring this discussion full circle, the approximately $3 million would be the equivalent of 60 beds in the for the gang intervention program. And the question that would have to be answered for me is, are we successfully keeping 60 youth from being incarcerated as a result of these programs? And in the discussions I've had with one of the folks that work in the program, Jimmy Brown in Portland, who's of some renown for his work, he is persuaded not only do we keep at least that many youth out, but that it has a long-term benefit to society in general by catching these kids early and steering them in a different direction. So that would be the hurdle I'd have to get over.
Okay. You want to proceed with the budget notes?
Okay. Let me go back. I'm not sure we covered the budget statement of expectations.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is the language that this subcommittee asked agencies to consider as they're working with Department of Justice. And so our recommendation is this language be included in the budget report for the agency. Relative to Attorney General cost containment efforts.
Senator Trove?
On top of page 2, the statement of budget statement of expectations.
Okay.
This is language that I believe it was in February. This committee adopted and asked all agencies to address those issues.
Do you have any problem with any of those, Karen?
No, I don't.
Then into the budget notes, the first budget note we already talked about. This is the one that would indicate the expectation that OIA would report back to the emergency board on significant changes in the forecast. The second budget note.
May I ask Karen about that one? Is that one specific enough that gives you any kind of comfort?
Without a reserve, yes, it is.
Without a reserve, yeah. It'd be nice if we had a reserve. We don't, obviously. But
I will mention on that particular one, another factor that if the population increases significantly and there is a decision to fund more beds, another factor that comes into play at that point is the capital construction issue. As indicated in this chart, we expect that they would be getting to capacity by the end of the biennium in any case. If the forecast is a lot higher and the emergency board would look at adding beds during the biennium, then they will also have to deal with any capital construction issues at that time. There is a potential for remodeling 50 beds out at Hillcrest. The Department of Administrative Services expects to have some COP, certificates of participation, limitation that they could potentially use to fund that during the biennium if need be. So that would have to be something that would be addressed at that point.
And, Mr. Chair, okay. That's where we would look at working with the state hospital and using some of their capacity for a unit.
Senator Crowell?
Does it make sense for them to report back earlier to the e-board just in case they need to do that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, potentially they could be reporting back three different times. The forecasts are done semi-annually, so the next one will be in October. They could report back if there was a significant increase then. I would expect, though, that they would probably wait until at least a year out, which would be April of 2002. Again, because there is some fluctuation, but unless the October forecast would increase very significantly, I wouldn't expect them back at that time. I would expect that they might come back after the April one, depending on what that was and what their actual experiences has been. Again, it's the youth coming into their system. The forecast doesn't determine how youth come into the system or how long they stay. It's just sort of an indication based on current practices. And again, depending on what's happening at the local level and the impact of the juvenile crime prevention money, their actual experience may be different than we would expect at this time.
What about the mentally ill folks that were thinking about helping with that unit at the state hospital? Those people already in custody, they're just in inferior, they're not in maybe the right kind of treatment mode?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trove, if you recall our budget presentation, they are currently in our custody, and they are in. We have not centralized them into any one of our specific facilities. We've thought about that, have not done it yet.
So that clientele is already in place, so that if you needed more beds and if you filled beds with that clientele, you still need more beds.
Our plan was that as we developed growth, we would pay for, we would move those kids to the state hospital and pay for that with the growth of other kids filling the beds behind them.
Okay. Well, I wonder if we're really handling that problem as well as we could. Sheila, do your budget notes take into consideration that problem of the mentally ill patients?
There's no budget notes that address the services for mentally ill youth. There is a package in the governor's budget that adds mental health staffing in the youth correctional facilities, and that is included in the recommended budget. The only adjustment we made to that was a PERS rate adjustment, but otherwise we're recommending that you approve that package. So there is a small enhancement included in that.
Okay.
Under number two, budget notes, there are several here that deal with the Deschutes County Delinquent Youth Demonstration Project. Senate Bill 384 has an amendment under consideration that would require the Secretary of State to audit the project. There had been some interest in doing that, and so we're trying to get that into that particular piece of legislation. In addition to that, these budget notes lay out the expectation in terms of the project reports. And the second budget note under number two encourages OIA to work with counties who have expressed some interest in doing a similar type of county accountability model, to work with them to talk about what the criteria might be for doing that and to identify some implementation issues for projects, so that as this issue is expected to come up again in the next legislative session, that everyone can be prepared to hit the ground running about, you know, what does it take and who should participate and how those projects should be established.
Sure.
And I would hope in the budget note, at least one of the things, and I guess it'll be in 384 if that should pass, that the requirement that the audit be done by January of 2003, I would maybe suggest to them that an amendment be placed that it ought to be concluded by, like, July 1 of 2002, so the next assembly would have information before it, whether to suggest whether or not the program ought to be continued.
We've done the first one. Okay. And down the Deschutes County one.
Okay. We'll go ahead. Senator Trow?
Yeah, I was just going to say, do we know enough that about the Deschutes County
program? Remember, they were having a study done of it and all of that stuff, but I don't think it was complete when we heard about it, as I recall. Do we know enough about that to say that we want to authorize other communities to begin to plan to do the same thing?
I think the short answer is no, and I think that the director told me they're being a bit more responsive than they used to be. I think they know that we care, and in order to answer your question about whether or not others ought to replicate this experience, we need the information. So
from the
BIM
program.
And I think that's the point of these budget notes, is we want to find out how they're doing. And I'd also suggest on that same budget note, Senator Trow, that where it says assure an independent evaluation, it seems to me that we ought to have a hand in selecting the evaluator, as opposed to, I think the past practice has been that the county picks somebody out to evaluate their program, and lo and behold, they got pretty good remarks. Can you imagine?
What I wanted to suggest is, does it make sense to get other counties thinking this is going to happen to them before we know for sure whether we want to continue the BIM program?
Yeah, that's why I think if we expedite this evaluation and just frankly get information, we'll be better served.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the intent of the budget note is not to have new models or similar models being established during this interim. It's just to have OIA work with interested counties to identify what some of the issues would be.
Okay. So long as that's not viewed as encouraging them as though that's going to necessarily happen.
All right. Proceed.
Okay, number three, this budget note is in connection with the restoration of part of the Multnomah County Gang Intervention Funds. This asks OIA and Multnomah County to work together to direct some portion of those funds to a program such as the Out Front House to provide some shelter beds in the county. There was a need identified for some shelter bed resources to be funded as part of that money, and so this budget note would establish that direction. Then number four, this is one of those budget notes that says keep doing what you're doing, we think this is a good idea. This was a budget note that was adopted for the State Office of Services to Children and Families as well. They've been working together with other folks to look at shelter services for abused and runaway children, and this budget note gives some legislative support to that effort and asks for a report prior to the next legislative session. And then the last two budget notes come from the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee, who looked at the agency's information technology budget, the IT budget, and recommended two budget notes and also recommended that the Department of Administrative Services be asked to unschedule 15% of the agency's base information technology budget, which is about $130,000. The first budget note addresses collaboration with other agencies and partners on working to get information into the criminal justice information system. And then the second budget note would have OIA move its public web server or website to DOS's Information Resource Management Division if that is deemed to be feasible after all the parties take a look at it. And then they're to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, or whatever its name will be, by March 2002 on what's happened on that effort. So that's the budget notes as we recommend them. And then the last paragraph on your memo shows the recommended appropriation bill amendments. If the subcommittee adopts our recommended budget, then the Senate Bill 5546 should be amended as shown there on line 8, line 10, and line 14. So we recommend you adopt those amendments and move the bill to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due process recommendation.
Senator Troll moves that we adopt. Senator Troll asks
before we we go that far quickly. How about it, Karen? Are these budget notes things that you can respond to okay? Are there any problems with them?
No, these I can live with these budget notes and manage them just fine.
Representative Smith.
Hey, Karen, I want to digress for a moment and go back to staffing. There's a lot of folks who are worried about being laid off. And I'm imagining morale among those folks who are concerned is an issue within your department. How do you intend to deal with those folks? And reassure them that they are an important part of OIA if this progresses forward.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, thank you, and I'm going to ask this committee for guidance on that. As you know, we issued 150 layoff notices a couple weeks ago, and by 5 o'clock tomorrow, those people have to give us notice of which jobs they want to bump into as per the union contract. And I would like some guidance from this committee about my ability to. This budget would allow us to rescind not all, but most of those layoffs if this budget holds true. I'm seeking guidance from you about my ability to rescind those layoff notices. Morale is quite pitiful in the agency. I mean, we had layoff notices delivered to a guy in the hospital, and the guard delivered one to Idaho, and it's been a mess. There will be a great deal of expense if those notices go through and we're rehiring and whatnot. So I need to know kind of what the lay of the land is before I know how to deal with the issues now. So I guess before I can answer that, because it'll get worse, if I could go back and today rescind the notices before they give their notice back to me, that would help a lot.
Sure.
My concern is...
Sure, go ahead.
My concern is, one, it's a morale issue, but two, it's also additional expense to the state of Oregon dealing with this issue. So that's why I raised the point.
Well, there's a pretty good chance we'll vote on this in 5 minutes or so and give you some indication.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard had a question.
Well, I was just going to take you up on your offer for some input. I would urge that you contact OPEU and discuss your concerns with them and see if there isn't some mutually agreed process, maybe a little different than the contract given the vote that we're about to take, and usually is some certainty after a subcommittee approves a budget.
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from DAS. I think our Human Resource Services Division would work with Karen on what options are available for this, and we'd like to handle that through that way.
Senator Troll?
That was sort of my question, a combination of the two responses about how DAS would deal with it and OPU, and I think they've been handled.
Okay, are there, now Senator Trowden, oh, Senator Brown.
Thanks, just, I just want to sort of, for the record, get sort of where we are in terms of this budget. Karen, could you tell me how much money it would take to restore so we were at the, so we wouldn't be short 30 beds, and what it would take to fully restore the community programs that have been cut?
Okay, yes, I would be happy, Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, members of the committee. To restore the bedside would take about an additional $2.5 million, and the community side restoration would take an additional $3 million.
5.5.
Okay, further questions? Senator Trowe wishes to, or moves that we adopt the memo submitted dated June 20, 2001 regarding Senate Bill 5546 containing the description of this, of the Oregon Youth Authority Program, as well as the budget notes, of which there are six, and the amendments that would be made in the appropriation bill, Senate Bill 5546. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the motion is agreed to. Senator Trowe moves that Senate Bill 5546 be moved to the Committee on Ways and Means, where they do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, it is so ordered. Thank you, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5546.
Thank you very much.
Carriers, the you bet. Thank you, Karen. Representative Smith in the House, and I suppose I could do it, unless you don't want to be in.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I get my flak jacket on. All right, well, we close the work session. Thank you, Sheila, very much.
Thanks,
Senate Bill 5546, and we'll open up the work session, Senate Bill 370. Mr. Nyswender.
Yes, Chair Miller and committee members. I placed before you a packet for Senate Bill 370. on top of that packet is a fiscal impact statement, and I will go walk through that in just a minute, as well as a staff measure summary, some amendments that have been approved by the co-chairs, as well as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee that sent the bill to Ways and Means. In summary, this is a bill that repeals the sunset on the provisions of law that deal with the sex offender registration program that is administered by the state police. It contains provisions that also limit the posting of certain sex offender information on the internet. It contains provisions that allow sex offenders, juvenile sex offenders, to petition the court for exemption from the registration requirements. Shortens the time frame from 10 years in cases to 90 days when they fall out of the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. It also contains other provisions unrelated to the sex offender registration program. Specifically, it contains provisions that establish presumptive life sentences for offenders upon their third conviction for a sex offense, and also establishes some additional notification requirements. Contained in the bill as it came to Ways and Means is a general fund appropriation for the state police. As you recall, when we worked the state police budget, this was a part of the recommended budget for the governor's budget for state police. However, there was no general fund appropriation to cover the cost of the program. This is a program where the fees collected from sex offenders are not adequate to cover the cost, and it is only partially funded with other funds. In the -A18 amendments that I placed before you, these are amendments that reflect the final product of a work group that kept meeting after the A engrossed version of the bill passed out of committee, basically to clarify procedures and clear up wording. The staff of that committee is here today if you have any substantive questions to ask. The bill was referred to this committee so it could deal with the fiscal aspects. In the amendments to the bill, we have made the requirements, the ability of the juveniles to appeal the courts for exemption from the reporting requirements to be prospective. In other words, Section 3C of the amendments make it so that it is for acts that are committed on or after the operative date of this bill, which is July 1, 2001. So What that has the effect of doing is further reducing the court operations and indigent defense expenses, thus reducing, if not in this case, eliminating the need for an appropriation for those costs. If you adopt the A18 amendments today, the Department of State Police will receive their general fund appropriation, as well as a $174,998 other funds limitation. And consistent with that, they will need a position authority to continue six positions that are currently operating this program, five of which are filled, and when I last checked, one was currently under recruitment.
Okay. The Representative Smith.
Hey, Larry, when I'm looking at personnel services, how come there's not a COLA adjustment from 2001 to 2003?
Chair Mueller, committee members, this is standard procedure for our fiscals. We will carry those costs straight up. We don't know what the COLA adjustments will be, and there's no presumptions made relative to that. When we know the program's going to continue, we just, for consistency's sake, reflect them as an ongoing expense. There will be COLA expenses.
All right, we're in a work session, and Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, the only concern I have on this is an issue that's been raised on the sentencing, on the life sentence for third conviction, how that relates to somebody that has committed had a couple convictions but are virtually simultaneous before they served any prison sentence. I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to discuss an amendment that would kind of clarify that.
I don't think that we have the authority to amend the substantive portions of these bills. If we were uncomfortable with the language, I suppose we'd have to send back to Judiciary Committee. I was informed by the chairman of the Senate committee that the dash 18s were the only acceptable amendment. Senator Brown?
I just have a comment for the record. On page 3, lines 18 through 23, the amendments require that the state have the right to a psychosexual evaluation. And the work group intended that this would be done either by a psychologist, psychiatrist, or a master's level therapist. So there is a variety of folks that actually could conduct this evaluation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Leonard.
I'm looking at the definitions in the statute that are referred to in Senate Bill 370. And it says, and I'm specifically looking at the part where the internet is used to publicize the information on a sex offender, and it says if a person is a sex offender is defined in RS 181594. And when you look there, it lists the kinds of crimes that would qualify a person to end up on the internet, and one of them is private indecency. That is.
Public
I mean, I know what that is, but I don't know what it means in the definition of this crime. Do we have anybody who can explain what the crime of private indecency is?
I don't have a clue.
I could guess.
Yeah, Dale, you ought to know this stuff.
I'd much rather have Kathy explain.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Penn.
private indecency.
You want to identify yourself?
Oh, sorry, Kathy Osborne. I'm a senior attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project. Private indecency was a crime that was actually established by the last legislative session to deal with a case out of Lane County where an individual broke into a dorm room at the University of Oregon and was exposing himself. to the young woman whose dorm room it was.
Why isn't that public indecency?
Because a dorm room is not considered an area open to the public.
But you're describing the incident that gave rise to this. I'm asking what the definition is.
The definition of private indecency would be essentially causing some in a private area. Thank you. It is if the person exposes the genitals of the person with the intent of arousing sexual desire of the person or another person, and they're in a place where another person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, they're in the view of the other person, the exposure would be reasonably expected to alarm or annoy the person, and the person knows that they didn't consent to such exposure. So it's when somebody goes into an area that, you know, into your house, that's not who's maybe, even if they're invited into your house, it's a private area, so it's not public indecency, and if all of a sudden they expose themselves to you without your consent with the intent of either sexually gratifying them, arousing themselves, or you, that would be private indecency.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate that. Is there any other discussion? I don't know, Representative Hansen, I didn't quickly answer your question.
I think you did. You said no amendment.
Okay. Senator Brown.
Back on the fiscal question for Larry. Mm-hmm. Does your fiscal include fiscal costs for court operations and indigent defense? And if so, what do you have those listed at?
Yeah. Chair Miller and Senator Brown, on the second page of the fiscal impact statement, there are court operations costs in both referenced in both sections 3 and 4. They are considered pretty minimal for 01, 03 biennia. You can see in the under section 3, the last paragraph there, it says the Judicial Department estimated expenditures for 01, 03 biennium will be minimal. Has to do with the juvenile justice system and juvenile court wardship issues. Section 4, there are under the second paragraph there also, there's some dollar figures to show you what the full per biennia costs would be. For indigent defense, for instance, it is estimated to be about $55,000 in 01-03. We haven't specifically made appropriation for that in this bill. As you recall, that's approximately $156 million budget for that, and we consider that amount fairly minimal.
Okay. Further discussion? Being in a work session, I have a motion on the Dash 18, or the chair would move that we adopt the Dash 18 amendments to Senate Bill 370. Further discussion? Hearing and seeing none, the amendments are agreed to. Senator Brown moves.
I would move the bill.
Senator Brown moves Senate Bill 370 as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, it is so ordered. Would you like to?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Senator Brown will carry it to the full. I don't know whether you or Senator Menace or whoever would want to.
I guess the Senator Menace will want to, but.
Okay. And on the House, on the floor.
Representative Leonard.
Representative Leonard, yes. Thank you very much. Representative Leonard.
The defense lobby.
And if there's, we'll close the work session, Senate Bill 370. Anything further to come before the committee?
Not today.
Not today.
Keep your eyes open.
Keep your eyes open. Thank you all for your attendance, and we are adjourned.
Thank you for the donuts, Mr.